This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
Many thanks to Jim Phillips, the new commissioner of the ACC, who joined us. And if you missed it, we'll probably give you a little double dose of that coming up in the Power Hour as well. But Wes, this hour is slammed, right? We're going to have a fun segment later this hour that'll be totally offbeat. You'll enjoy it, I think. We'll see. But you will love the next two segments because the one and only Tom Luganville joins us as he always does every Tuesday at this time. Lugs, it is a busy, busy week. Not only do we have championship games, but we also got this thing called National Signing Day that occupies a lot of your time coming up tomorrow. This is a crazy week for you.
It is. So two things. First off, I'm offended that this isn't the fun and crazy segment.
Well,
because
it could be.
That's what this segment is.
It could be. It could be. But
two,
we got something else.
Every time I'm waiting in the queue and I see you guys and I haven't come up yet, I see Wes with this little grin like he's stolen something out of a cabinet that he's not supposed to have. So I got to ask him, what's the smirk for?
Because I know when you come on here, you've always got a punch list of things that we want to discuss before we get on the air. And we kind of went through that list today. And no. Before we go on the air, we have a couple things we always want to hit. And did we not cover those today, Pac, and the inequities of some things that go on in our world?
We did. That's called our commercial
break. Yes, we did.
That's called our commercial break, getting something off your chest.
That's it.
We should air that sometime.
Yeah, I like it. Hey, no problem at all. I'm with
you. We just might. Hey, don't sell us short. Come blooper time. Believe me, it is. We are capable of delivering that all day. But seriously, on a serious note, I can't imagine you being any busier than this week. I mean, just can't be.
You know, it's so crazy because, you know, over the last several weeks, I've had a lot of people ask me, you know, signing day's coming up, and that thing is going to fall on a game week. And so for the last 15 years, you know, you're preparing for all of this content and what we're going to present on Wednesday, but you're not having to worry about preparing for a game or anything else going on. And, you know, I think, to be honest with you, I think that's where the NCAA really dropped the ball here. I mean, we have games with massive implications, huge implications.
Right.
And these coaches right now aren't just game planning to win the game. They're worried about signing their classes. By the way, classes that, in many cases, they've never met the prospect face-to-face, all right? The entire recruitment's been virtual. They may not have ever had the kid on campus. He may never attended their camp. And so you're going to get him to sign on the dotted line. Oh, and then, by the way, we might have to prepare for a game that could decide whether or not we're in the college football playoff. And I just think that there was so little direction by either the NCAA coming out and just saying, you know what, we're going to wipe the first one clean. We're going to push everything back to February. Let everybody focus. You know, unprecedented times require unprecedented measures. Prepare for what you're trying to do to win a championship, to get your team better on the field. Or better yet, one of the things that I proposed is if we're going to have the early signing period, why not just say, all right, guys, starting October 15th through December 15th, whoever's committed to you, they can sign. They want to sign, they can sign. So you have a long time to get it done. The majority of those guys would get out of the way. It would lessen the load this week. You could get back to preparing to play a game. But there was never any directives. There was never any leadership as to say, well, wait a minute, this thing's going to fall on championship week. And it was as if it was ignored.
I think this is another example, believe it or not, guys, and just added to the list of the mismanagement a little bit of the way the NCAA's handled this. I mean, Luke, we've talked about it in basketball. We still don't know what the minimum number you have to play a game is. I mean, for all we know, somebody might run four out there and pull the Norman Dale and Hoosiers. My team is on the floor, you know, during a game or whatever.
Boy.
You know, I mean, that's a whole nother topic. But here's the other part about this, and I think you brought something up that a lot of people have not thought about. This is an entire recruiting class that nobody's ever seen that they're getting ready to sign.
Yeah,
an entire recruiting class. They may have had them on campus as, what, prior to their junior year, Tom, right? It would be prior to their junior year they had them on campus. They knew them as juniors, but they haven't seen them since. I mean, the kid 190 could have gone to 260 and play a different position or whatever the case may be. Some of these kids are signing and did not play football this year, right?
Right, absolutely. And Jeff Hafley at Boston College acknowledged yesterday that he will be signing players he has not met in person. Hmm. Think about that. I mean, you are putting all of these resources into trying to evaluate all of the things that have nothing to do with the actual player's talent. You can turn on the film and watch that. You can see in camp and combine clips. But when you're trying to uncover intangible traits, competitive temperament, mental toughness, how does a kid interact with his peers when you have him on campus and he's in your camp setting? How does he react to being coached hard? Can he handle being coached? All of these things that are huge components to the evaluation process have been wiped off the map. Now, listen, are there programs, top 20, top 25, top 30 programs in the country that have likely had the bulk of the kids that have committed to them on campus at least one time as a sophomore, junior? Absolutely. Have they probably attended camp? Absolutely. There's 130-plus FBS programs, and I can assure you the larger percentage of the prospects and the coaching staffs that have been involved in this process will be signing kids they have never seen face-to-face, all right, and have had limited opportunities to gather all the information that you want to have. And so that what worries me, guys, is that on behalf of the university side and the player side, are we going to have a mass exodus into the transfer portal because there's buyer's remorse? Then what happens? You've already got the extra year of eligibility. You've already got the problem of trying to get from over 85 back down to 85. I mean, this thing's going to get real muddy before it gets clean.
Well, again, as you well know, neither one of us are recruiting junkies, but you're all over this. Give me a storyline or two tomorrow from an ACC perspective that we should keep an eye on. I mean, we know what, you know, listen, Clemson's going to recruit dudes. North Carolina's off a roll. I get all that stuff, right? Notre Dame's doing their thing. Florida State, Miami, yada, yada, yada. But give me two or three storylines tomorrow, ACC-wise, recruiting, that we should pay attention to.
Florida State right now, who is teetering on the brink of a top 25 class, surprisingly, with all the negativity swirling around the program. Could they close with a couple of guys? Of course, because we're on a conference platform here, we can't talk specific players. But I do think that they have the opportunity to close this thing out with some positive momentum and head into the offseason. To me, that would be a remarkable feat for a program that's dealt with nothing but a giant black cloud over their program for the entire fall. If you're a Florida State fan, that's really, really good news. I think the real thing that we've got to look to here, and it's not going to be something that you can point to specifics, but there are going to be programs with the extra year of eligibility. I'm going to use Miami for example here. What does Derek King do? What do others do that are upperclassmen when you as a program are anticipating that you're going to use your full allotment of scholarships and direct it to the high school level? All right. How does that impact the juggling of your numbers? You get your abacus out, you're trying to figure out, you know, all the numbers and how they're going to crunch and how they're going to work. That's another storyline for me. I think secondly, two teams that really impressed me at quarterback, NC State and Virginia, both got really good quarterbacks in this class. And again, I can't mention names, but just impressed with their efforts at that position. And we've talked about the strength of this conference from a quarterback perspective. That's a good sign for the overall balance of the conference. But really the storyline, and it's ACC-related, it's college football-related, is how do you avoid missing on multiple prospects in this cycle? I don't know if it's possible to not. The goal is to not to miss on significant numbers.
Okay, I want to go back to something you talked about, and I want to tie it to what you just said. How important is it for the marginal senior who's got the bonus year from the NCAA, no matter position? I mean, we could talk about De'Eriq King, Kenny Pickett. You know, there are dozens of them, right, who are seniors that I want to get on with it, or I'm thinking about the NFL, but I'm not sure where my NFL status is. Well, why don't you think about staying one more year? How much is the yin and the yang on that, Tom, for these coaches right now? Because that seems to me, in the case of King – I don't think it'd be a bad idea. That's just me personally. Play one more year, yeah. Show people you can throw it vertically consistently. They already know you can run. You're going to be better. I mean, as a football team, you're going to have more recruiting, more supplemental players around you. Kenny Pickett? Yeah, I mean, he could be the greatest quarterback in Pitt history if he stayed another year on the bonus year. He may want to go ahead and start the clock. I'm just using a name there. But how much is the yin and the yang on all this?
It's significant, and I'm going to throw another variable in there, too, that people aren't aware of, and I think I've discussed this with you guys before, is what a lot of people may not know, because they're looking at the extra year of eligibility from a surface-level perspective, is that once a prospect at his respective school has exhausted the length and the term of his scholarship, meaning that the university itself has held up their end of the bargain, that player still gets an extra year of eligibility, but that school is not required to give it to him. So the discussions with that player, let's just say you've got a program guy or a guy that's in your two or three deep, you might be having a conversation with that young man saying, it might be time for you to find another place, because we got to make decisions for the long-term viability of the program, whether that's going to be through the transfer portal ourselves, grad transfers, or applying again that scholarship to freshmen. So the fact that we all think that everybody gets the extra year, if that's true, doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be at their respective institution. So the question you're asking, a conversation with a Kenny Pickett or a Derek King, is the conversation that you're having to try and either convince or re-recruit that player to say, hey, it's in your best interest to stay. But a lot of those conversations may be taking place with players where you're saying, you might have to go.
Tommy, crystal ball this. Again, a lot could and will happen between tomorrow and actually signing on the dotted line. But do you project the ACC? And I'm going to just throw Notre Dame in it since they're in the conference as we speak.
Yeah.
Do you think the ACC can come up with four in the top 10 in recruiting tomorrow? Is that possible?
I really do. And they're going to sit with four going in today when we release our most recent, and that includes Notre Dame. So you're going to have Clemson, Notre Dame, Miami, and North Carolina in the top 10 heading into tomorrow. Now, listen, as you said, we can crystal ball this. Guys can flip. Guys can decide not to sign. Maybe they postpone it to February. But more importantly than that, could you have an NC State that's looming right there around 25, stick in the top 25? Could you have Virginia again bump up just a little bit? Pitt is teetering on that 23 to 25 range. So, man, if you're looking at this from a conference perspective, to have six, seven, maybe eight teams teetering there on the top 25 or within the top 25, that would be a remarkable, I think, reflection of where the conference is going.
Mm. All right. Sit tight. When we come back, we will talk to Tom about Saturday's showdown in Charlotte between Clemson and Notre Dame, and more on this final weekend, if you will, of conference action in the ACC, and what he thinks the keys might be. QB plays pretty solid both ways, it looks like. We'll talk to Lugs about that. We continue Packer and Durham on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer, Durham, Luganville. Tuesday staple, as Wes likes to call it, from 8 to 8:30. We have a crazy segment coming up in about 15 minutes, so hang tight on that. But we got some business to attend to, though, because Notre Dame and Clemson, part two, Saturday, Charlotte, North Carolina. Lugs, tag, you're it. What are the keys in this bad boy? This rematch has got all kinds of great potential.
All right, so guys, I'm not a statistics guy at all outside of four. There are four statistics, in my opinion, that have a direct correlation to winning and losing. Third down conversion rate, average yards per pass attempt, rush attempts, not rush yards, rush attempts, okay, and turnover margin. If you win three of those four or four of those four, you're not losing the game. So each and every week, what I do on a Sunday is I go and I click through and I go to team stats and I start looking at those four. You go back to that first game, all right? Notre Dame wins three out of the four. The only one that Clemson won was average yards per pass attempt, and that's a reflection of explosive plays. And as you guys know, Clemson had many explosive plays. They lost a turnover battle 3-1. Notre Dame had 40 rush attempts. Clemson had 33. ETN only had 28 yards, all right? And Notre Dame was a staggering 10 of 14 on third down, and Clemson was abysmal on third down. So I look at this matchup, and I say very, very clearly, third down for the Clemson offense, all right, and protecting the football. It's that simple. If you turn the ball over three times and you can't run it and you don't convert on third down and you take a team into double overtime and have a chance to win, what does that tell you is going to happen if you play clean football, all right? And, again, we all know how difficult it is to beat a team twice, and I think this Notre Dame team is actually a better team now than the one that Clemson played when they went up to South Bend. But to me, it's very, very clear. Those four stats I mentioned, you win three out of those four. If you're Clemson, you're winning the game. If you win four out of the four, you're winning the game. Last time, Notre Dame did, and they won. And I just think, again, third down moving on offense, protecting the football would give Clemson a significant edge in this matchup.
Tom, you watched the first game. How did Notre Dame stop Travis Etienne to averaging a yard a carry?
Well, turnovers didn't help, but I also think that what Notre Dame decided to do is they said, listen, if this team is going to beat us, it is not going to be on the ground. We've got a true freshman quarterback on the road, albeit a very, very talented guy, and you guys have seen the numbers. DJ had a remarkable day. But they were, when you've got a freshman quarterback, what are you going to do? You're going to load the box and you're going to dare him to throw it. You're going to say, hey, you're going to have to beat us through the air. We are not going to allow you to churn the clock, wear us down, and run the football. And I would have taken the same approach on defense. And I think it was a smart one. Now, will the approach be similar when the quarterback is Trevor Lawrence? We'll see. But I also believe that outside of years past, when we've seen Notre Dame struggle in elite matchups, whether it's the college football playoff or teams that have overmatched them, where have they overmatched them? They've overmatched them up front on both sides of the ball. That's not necessarily the case anymore. That's why this Notre Dame team is different. So the question is going to be, does Notre Dame feel like they can play not with a light box, but with a six-man box normally, stop the run, all right, sufficiently, and not give up explosives through the air with Trevor Lawrence being the quarterback this time around?
Tom, you know what? If I'm Notre Dame, you know what I love about Notre Dame's position this week? Number one, I think they can lose and still make the playoff. But they're not thinking that. Brian Kelly talked about that yesterday.
Right.
Here's what I think. If I'm Notre Dame, here's what I love. You know what? We beat these guys once, all right? And now we roll into game two. And it's almost as if nobody's talked about that. Everything's about, oh, Trevor Lawrence is back. Skalski's back. Tyler Davis is back. Scoreboard, boys. We beat you once, and even the smart folks in Vegas have the audacity to say, not only are we an underdog, we're a double-digit underdog. And, again, I'm not a gambler, and I went to Clemson. I'll tell you up front, I'm an alum. That number seems absurd to me. And, again, I know there's smart guys in the desert, and that's why I don't gamble. But I think if I'm Notre Dame, I love all of that. I love all the fact that, guess what? Yeah, we can't beat these guys. Yeah, okay, great. You know, don't mind us. We'll just bring our undefeated record. We're 10 and stinking 0. Yeah, I know we're just in the league for 1 year. I get all that, too. Y'all bark at us all you want. But guess what? We're going to line up, and we're going to go punch you in the mouth like we've done everybody else that we've lined up against, because that's what we do. We don't have to change anything. We're going to line up, and we're going to hit you right between the eyes and see how you respond. And I think if I'm Notre Dame this week, I love that position. I love that position.
Brian Kelly has got to be ecstatic with all of this, because all it does is do his job for him leading into the week. Now, listen, he knows his team's good. He knows they have pride. They know they're competitive. They know they have mental toughness. They know they're good up front, all right? I think Vegas is thinking along the lines of the first statement you made, and that is, what if there's anything that could get in the way of an 18 to 21 year old's mentality, it's we may not have to win this game. Not saying that the kids would do that, but I think Vegas to some degree is looking at that, saying, because I agree with you, I think Notre Dame can lose this game and will still be in the four spot. In fact, I believe that firmly. But listen, if you're Clemson on defense, I don't think it matters who's back, who's missing. It matters on whether or not you can contain the quarterback. The plays Ian Book made when things weren't perfect, that he had to create on his own, are the teams that Brent Venables and the defense has to eliminate this week.
Tom, I start to look at the quarterback position, and I just think we spent a lot of time on Book and Lawrence in the ball game Saturday, but the QB position in this league has just been lights out. I mean, it's just been really good. I mean, you go back to 2 weeks ago, we were talking about the emergence of Bailey Hockman on the back end of the deal. Sam Howell, I mean, seriously, Saturday he's throwing it everywhere. Malik Cunningham's put up APY numbers. It's just been a really, really – and Pack gets all the credit because he said, if we get 2020, the ACC's going to have a really, really good year, especially a quarterback. And I think the position's delivered, to be honest.
Well, it has, and that's how you build your conference, right? That's where conference strength starts. It's kind of like building a team, right? In any sport, you build it from the inside out. Well, if you've got quality quarterback play, everything else can start to fall into place. If you have poor quarterback play, you could have great players at all the other positions, and it may not matter. So it's obviously so important to have the former and not the latter. And again, we talked about Kenny Pickett coming back potentially. We talked about Derek King, who I think should come back. They're young at Florida State. We've got Jeff Sims, young and emerging at Georgia Tech. We've talked for a couple of weeks how much I love Brennan Armstrong at Virginia. So Sam Hartman's another one at Wake. We can just keep going. Devin Leary and Bailey Hockman will be back. This thing goes on and on for the overall health top to bottom of the league.
But, Tom, it's more than quarterbacks, though. You know, you mentioned, hey, if you have a lot of good quarterbacks, everything else can fall into place. When you have the combination of really quality, deep quarterbacks and you have really good players along the lines everywhere else, that's why I thought 2020 was a critical year for the league to play games, because it was an uptick in terms of talent. And, you know, you see it this week in the AP Top 25. And not that that's a standard, but I'll just use it. The ACC's got five ranked teams this week. Nobody else in the country's got more than five. And that's where we are. So this has been a special year for ACC football. Doesn't mean you're going to win the national title. Who knows? Maybe you do. Sure. Maybe you get two in. Who knows? That'll all take care of itself. But in terms of the quality of the league, especially the upper half, this has been a really, really good year for ACC football.
Yeah, and I would lastly add to that when you talked about the people up front. Because, you know, we're in the middle of recruiting right now, and people ask me, well, why don't you not have this wide receiver or that running back in the top 10 or the top 20? My answer is very simple. Because those guys are everywhere. They're standing on every street corner. I can throw a rock outside my office and hit a wide receiver right now. But I can't hit an offensive tackle. I can't hit a defensive tackle. Can't hit a corner. Can't hit a quarterback. I got to search far and wide to find those guys. And if you're questioning my logic on that, go look at the NFL draft every year. Go look at the top 10 to 15 picks and what positions they're at.
Yeah.
By the way, if they were standing outside your office, could you still hit them would be the question.
Oh, yeah. Dude. Oh, please.
Let me tell you something.
Come on.
This chicken wing still rips. All right? I'm just going to let you know right now. And I can change arm angles.
Great. Happy signing day. Good to see you're working this week. Proud to be a part of your process and the workflow this week.
Oh, I know you are.
Yeah. Have a great week.
Bye, boys.
See you soon, Luke.
See you, Tom.
All right. When we come back, we'll get into something very unique. Quick reminder, Luganville will be part of the signing day special on the Huddle. Breaking down all the recruits in the ACC starts at 5 o'clock tomorrow afternoon here on ACC Network and the ESPN app. Huddle Boys busy this week. Wednesday show, Saturday show. They'll take you through each school, highlights and evaluations from Lugs and others. Nobody covers the ACC like we do. When we come back on this program, allegedly, Coach Fuente meets the media. I'm skeptical as to whether it's the real coach or our coach next.
Packer and Durham.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
We welcome you back to the Tuesday edition of Packer and Durham here on ACC Network. Michael Carter of North Carolina, Alan Griffin of Syracuse, and more still to come for you. Missed our visit with the new ACC Commissioner Jim Phillips. We'll replay highlights of that coming up at top of the hour. However, right now, we are going to go to a special visit with the pseudo head football coach of the Virginia Tech Hokies. That would be Pac Fuente. And, Coach, I know you've agreed to take a few questions here. And my first one would be, it's quite a win on Saturday night. Yeah. And whether or not you get a postseason opportunity, I'm curious to know, Coach Pac Fuente, what that win Saturday night means in your 2021 season.
Well, Virginia is they're good. They're good, but oh my God, I'm getting lots of water. We got the cup. All right, the cup is back where it belongs, and don't get perplexed. We got the cup. Excuse me. That's water, and don't let these biceps get in the way. But a good win. Kids played hard. And, it's, like I said, 20-22, scoreboard. Next question.
Coach Pac Fuente, happy holidays. Kelsey Riggs here. Kind of a selfish question I have for you. Who at ACC Network would you want to compete in a push-up contest against because you knew that you would beat them? Don't say me.
First of all, I like Kelsey. There's some media people, that do good jobs, and I like questions from Kelsey. Push-ups, it really, first of all, wouldn't be fair because they're, Cornette. Yeah. I mean, Cornette, you probably do two or three, be exhausted. Matt Klein, maybe in his heyday, but not now. He couldn't go. Richt, I wouldn't do that to Coach. I respect Coach. Coaches respect coaches, so I wouldn't bring him in it. EJ Manuel, pretty boy gonna sweat too much. He wouldn't be much of competition. I'll be honest with you. I don't know. Cotter looks like I'd hang out with Cotter. All right, let's go. I'm gonna go Cotter because Packer and Durham, my boys up there, they never put them on the air. So let's go Cotter with a push-up contest. And we're the only two guys with any kind of biceps, me and Cotter. So, let's go Cotter with the answer on that one. Cotter, next question.
Pac Fuente, what's one thing you tried once but would never try again?
Oh, that's a good question. I like coveted invite. She asks good questions. She's been good for us. And, the coveted invite, the one thing I'd try, maybe a long weekend in Charlottesville, be last thing I tried. That's about it. One long weekend in Charlottesville. But of course, invite, I've done so many Virginia games. She'd probably give me a good place to hang out, bed and breakfast, something like that. So maybe a road trip to Charlottesville. Next question.
Hey, Coach Pac Fuente. Derek Lane Mack here, inside reporter, ACC Network. My girlfriend was wondering how I could look more swole, and I figured I'd ask you, should I start working out more or just wear smaller T-shirts?
Oh, God. Like I told you, there's some people in the media I like. There's some people in the media that you know, need to get a haircut or whatever that boy's doing right there. I don't know. That whole question's perplexing. Man, who was that guy? That wasn't David Teal, was it? That wasn't Teal. Teal asked good questions. I forgot. What was the question? Well, I don't even remember. Hey, you know, we got the cup. Hey, there's Durham. There's my man, Durham. Durham, I like Wes. You know, Wes does a bunch of our games. And Wes, you got a question? What do you got? Huh? What you got,
Wes? No, Coach. I think the question that Derek Lanemack asked was about how does he get better biceps? Is that T-shirt or is it shirt size or straight workout?
You know, my man Packer.
He looked very familiar, but I'm not sure. He looked very familiar.
My man Pack always says, "If you got it, flaunt it." So, You know, I'm doing all y'all a favor by wearing a long sleeve sweatshirt, Virginia Tech Hokies. Of course, staff hooks me up on this, but you know, if I come out there with some of those short sleeve things like Cotter wears, it wouldn't really be much of it. I mean, you guys wouldn't even pay attention to what I'm saying. So. Hey, we're excited. We played well. We won the football game Saturday. And, again, I hope everybody that loves the Hokies, Hokie Nation Cup, is right back where it belongs. And if they put us in the bowl, I think that we might make it 28 in a row. That's all I got to say. That's all I got.
Coach, a real treat. Real treat. Appreciate you letting us kind of join you here for a few exclusive questions. We've got to move along, though.
Yeah.
Because Michael Carter, who ran for 214 yards against Virginia Tech earlier this year, is set to join us. When we come back, our visit with the Tar Heels tailback is next on ACC Network with Packer and Durham and no Pack Fuente after this.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Hey, don't forget ACC football. There is a regular season game coming up on Saturday. We'll have it for you at noon here on ACC Network. Florida State visits Wake Forest. Chris Cotter, Roddy Jones, and Eric Wood provide the coverage for you from Truist Field in Winston-Salem with the Seminoles and Deacons. We welcome you back to Packer and Durham on this Tuesday. Nice to see you, Pack.
Yeah.
Looking good, son.
Fun with Foo, my man. We did, you know, we don't have conference cuts this week, so we decided just to come up with something creative. So there you go.
Well, that's a good idea. I like that. It was well done and well played.
We had the opportunity.
Michael Carter visited with us yesterday.
Yeah, we had a chance to talk to the guy that's still running on Miami. Everybody was running on Miami this weekend, apparently, but Michael Carter went off. And we started the conversation yesterday by asking him a simple question. What did you have for breakfast on Saturday?
I just had a couple pieces of bacon. I don't remember.
I tell you what, you better remember because after 300 plus on the ground, my man, I'd be eating that every day of my life. You kidding me? You were ridiculous. Your whole team Saturday was ridiculous. I mean, in your life, have you ever had a game like that where every time you touch it, there was a giant hole or – I mean, everything you guys touched turned to gold on Saturday.
Man, I've had a couple games like that in my life, but not in college. Not the way that they was opening up. And just what everybody was getting active on Saturday. It was just crazy. I've never played a game like that where everybody had gotten off. And that's amazing. It's so crazy. I'm so blessed. Wow.
Michael, when did you have a feeling the run game would be there on Saturday? I mean, you may not have thought it would be there like it was, but did you think, okay, Javonte and I got a chance here just because of the way these guys have blocked it and the way we're scouting this, we got a chance for a big day?
They look really good on film. A lot of credit to Miami. They're a good team. Like, people acting like they wasn't a good team. But I think during the warm-ups, me and Javonte felt really good. We felt good about the week of preparation. And then after my first run, I felt like we were going to have a big day. It would kind of solidify what we thought pregame.
Michael, when you're in a game like that, is there a point early where you get a sense of, hey, you know what? They don't want any piece of us. You know, they don't want to tackle me. Our guys are blocking downfield. I mean, you would go 10, 15 yards downfield before you'd ever see a black jersey. Was there a point in time in the game where you sense, hey, this thing's over, man. It's showtime.
Man, me and Vontae, we just, encouraging the offensive line, tight end, receivers, quarterback, just to restart every time. So in the moment, it's not like, okay, yeah, this game over. It's more like, can we do it again? So that's what we're trying to do.
Well, the interesting stat, we ran a stat on the show yesterday where, like, yards before contact, almost two-thirds of your rushing yards combined between you and Javonte was before you guys got touched. That speaks to the work those guys have done up front with Coach Searles for sure, but also the threat too. And when you guys get the two-way game going, the throws from Sam downfield, things of that nature, even to what you and Javonte catch out of the backfield, you guys are hard to guard now when the two-way game gets going.
Yeah, I agree. And, obviously football guys, so it starts up front with the offense and defensive line. And our offensive line did a really good job playing against a great defensive line that Miami has, full of NFL guys. But like you said, whenever we get going, we can do whatever we want. And our play callers and assistant coaches, they're amazing too. So everything was just, it was perfect timing and everything hit on all cylinders.
Michael, let me take you back before Miami. You played Notre Dame. And you know what? Notre Dame's got a great team, great defensive line, and they really bottled you guys up for the last three quarters after the quick start. When that game ended, what kind of conversations did you have on the offensive side to say, listen, you know what, we're better than that? I mean, listen, tip of the hat to Notre Dame, they're really, really good. But that wasn't North Carolina football for the last half. How much what kind of conversation did you have? And was that kind of a catalyst for the demonstration that you put on Saturday where you guys just went off?
I mean, we try to be the same team every week. And obviously Notre Dame is a great team who I wouldn't be surprised if they won it all. They're too deep on the defensive line. They're too deep is all NFL guys. They're great players. The linebacker, number 6, great player. 14, great player. So it came down to we just didn't make enough plays in the second half. I think we were tied at halftime, but we didn't really make enough plays in the second half. So it wasn't really – it was them. They put a good game, but we just didn't execute on our side. So going back to the drawing board the next week, it was not about Notre Dame. Like, it's always about us. And we just took it into the next week. Like, we're better than that, and we have more to prove.
Michael, you and Javonte have become such a formidable 1-2 in ACC football this year. I know you guys are great friends. In doing the Western Carolina game a couple of weeks ago, Coach Longo talked about the relationship you guys have, the way that it kind of comes about with Coach Gillespie during the ball games and so forth. What's that relationship with Javonte meant to you and the role you guys have played really in the resurgence of Carolina football?
It means a lot. It means a lot because, Javonte is an amazing player, and my whole time in college, I've had to share the rock with whoever it is in the backfield. So just to be able to have that friendly competitiveness and to have it be like my real, my real homie, it means a lot.
Michael, you mentioned that you thought maybe Notre Dame certainly capable of winning the whole thing. That would be the ACC championship and the national championship on top of it. Something tells me, though, there'll be a lot of guys in baby blue this week rooting for those guys with tiger paws on their helmet, because if Clemson and Notre Dame get in the college football playoff, in all likelihood, you guys are heading back to the Orange Bowl.
Yeah, that'd be amazing if we went to the Orange Bowl. So, yeah, I just want to see how the game plays out. Everybody knows if you know football, and it's hard to beat a good team twice. So Notre Dame will have a tall task in front of them. Trevor Lawrence back. And so we'll see how the game rolls out. But, yeah, we do want to go to the Orange Bowl.
Michael, I know Navarre, Florida is a long way from Hard Rock Stadium. I mean, it's about as far up the panhandle as you can go without crossing the line, I think. But still, what it mean to be in Miami and have that kind of ball game Saturday?
It was amazing. My whole family was there. And I love the weather down there. Just whenever, as soon as I step across the Florida State line, no matter where I'm at, I feel at home. So it was just, it felt good to be home.
By the way, in a game like that, Michael, do you know that you're over 300 yards? I mean, is somebody telling you on the sideline, hey, Mike, man, you're at 285, you're at 290. Do you know during a ball, because you know you're running at will, like me running against the kids at Thanksgiving in the backyard, but do you know during a game exactly where you are when you're having one of those kind of days?
Hey, that's some big kids in the backyard now.
Slow.
you get to about halftime, and then, you know, people are telling you, and then you get to, and then you realize how many yards you have at halftime. And to myself, I was just telling, I got more. Me and Vontae, every time he breaks off a long run, I gotta have one too. Whenever I break off a long run, he gotta have one right back. So it's about pushing each other, you know. And then when you get, I look up at the big board, the Jumbotron, it said 277. I was like, oh my God. I gotta get it. So whenever I looked up at there, it was motivating. So it's a blessing. That's funny.
Great, man. Whole team was.
Hey, Michael, there's been a lot of talk about this football team and all the elements of it. But yet, one of the things I gleaned from visiting with Coach Longo a couple of weeks ago was attitude. And he talked to me about your attitude every day and your personality every day. No matter win or loss, you always try and keep positive on all fronts every day. When you see Michael Carter, he told me when you see Michael Carter, it warms your day. It brings your day. It puts a smile on your face. I know your folks are important to you. I know your mom is served in the military. She's a great inspiration to you, as is the rest of your family. But what is it about your attitude that makes every day special?
Man, you gotta let them tell it. I try to be a positive influence, and just I like to have fun. So I just like to make sure everybody around me is doing good, and just make sure everybody's straight. So.
We ask this to every student athlete that appears on the show. I'm going to put you on the spot. Since you've been at the University of North Carolina, what has been the hardest class that you've had?
No question.
Econ 101, Michael. But you're okay. talking to an economics major here, man. Come on now, you got this. Supply and demand. Hey, it's supply and demand. It's like this. This is how it works. Let me tell you, I'm going to help you. It's how it works. It's supply and demand. You demand the ball, Coach Mack supplies the ball, man, and off to the races we go. That's how it works. Give me the rock. That's Econ 101 right there.
That's Econ 101. I wish it was that easy.
Well, I know this much. You made Saturday look easy, and congratulations to you and your entire team, because that was some kind of show you guys put on, man. That was unbelievable.
Thank y'all. We had a lot of fun.
Well, Michael Carter of North Carolina, just the second Tar Heel to eclipse 300 or more rushing yards in a ball game, joining Derek Fenner. That was a few years ago. Yep. Congratulations, my man.
Appreciate y'all. Thank y'all.
Crazy how good North Carolina was Saturday. That was unbelievable. Still, 544 those two guys. 544 just those two guys on the ground. Spectacular.
Yards, was it like 60-some percent of their yards came before contact?
It just blew people off the ball.
Between the two of them?
Crazy.
Yeah. Carolina probably wishes they had a crack to play somebody this week, don't they?
Yeah.
Just the way the momentum from that game would carry you.
Hey, you know, but, I got news for you. Georgia's looking for a game. Oh, that's right. SEC doesn't play non-conference games. I'd like to see that one, though. Forgot. My bad. I forgot.
Speaking of games.
I forgot they don't play non-conference games this year.
Georgia Vanderbilt postponed or canceled yesterday. Indiana Purdue, who were trying to play, not going to be able to play. That game just wiped off the board a few minutes ago, too. What have we found out this fall? Tuesday and Wednesday seem to be the big days, although you've had how many radio shows where the cancellations have occurred on Thursday and Fridays?
I can't tell you how many afternoons. Literally every 15 minutes I check my phone just to see what just got slashed. And, you know, hey, I suspect we'll get more of those this week. I hope we get Wake Forest and Florida State from an ACC perspective. And obviously we hope that Notre Dame and Clemson can stay healthy enough to kick this thing off for what should be an epic game. But while we got football in the brain, though, Wes, there is some basketball business we need to attend to.
I want you
to
hit this. Yeah.
We mentioned this last week, that this could potentially happen. And one of the most amazing streaks in college sports came to a screeching halt yesterday. The ACC, for the first time since March of 1996, does not have a team in the AP top 10. 461 consecutive polls. That is an all-time record. We brought this up last week on the show. It could happen after Duke lost to Illinois because they were in the 10 spot. And that's what we got. The flip side, though, looking for a positive, right? Bum that that streak comes to an end. But the ACC did play six teams in the AP top 25. Florida State's the highest-ranked team at 15. And then you rattle five more after that, and Clemson cracked the top 25 for the first time in a couple of years. So, again, there's still so many unknowns from a basketball perspective, but Florida State today, this second, is the highest-ranked ACC basketball team. But in a remarkable streak by the ACC came to an end yesterday with the releasing of the AP top 25.
All right. Well done. If you missed any of our interview with the newly elected ACC commissioner, Jim Phillips, he will be joining us on the replay here coming up in just a moment. You're going to enjoy the visit with the athletics director at Northwestern, who will start work here in February to replace John Swofford. Very entertaining visit. A lot of good thoughts and philosophies just about how the model of college athletics will work and how he sees it in his nearly 30 full years on college campuses. Jim Phillips joins us, in case you missed it, to start the Power Hour next.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.